Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Mad Tech Podcast. This is our first episode of 2019. We are delighted to be back and I'm delighted to be joined by Kieran O'Kane, our CEO, of course.
Hello. Happy New Year to everybody.
Yes, Happy New Year to everybody. And our special guest today is Mathieu Roche. He is the CEO and founder of ID5. Hello, Mathieu.
Good morning. How are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to all. Hope you all have wonderful festive periods. So to kick off today, first of all, I'm Lindsay Roundtree, of course. I'm head of content at Exchange Wire. To kick off, we're talking about Taboola launching what they're calling Taboola News in the face of the challenges around for publishers around kind of the native news aggregation sites like Apple News. And with the companies like Apple starting to look a lot like Facebook in the way they aggregate news and the way they actually then reward publishers for allowing their news to appear on it. And there was a talk in an article that was talking about the fact that a company called Slate actually found that they, for the 60,000 views on their own site of an article, gave them the same yield as millions of views through Apple News. So the yield they're getting, and it's becoming, you know, what proportion of traffic is relevant to actually the monetize it, how they're able to monetize it. So Taboola have launched Taboola News, a kind of a separate company. It actually rolled out last April, but it was on Android phones on ZTE handsets in China, rolled out in a couple of markets. So it's kind of quite small scale. They're now scaling up with a rollout in across APAC on different handsets. And it could go big for them. They're very, very confident about this because everything is actually, all the traffic goes back direct to the publishers. So the publishers can keep the yield. It's a way of them being able to increase their exposure like they would be able to on Google News and Apple News, but they get the yield back, which they're not getting at the moment.
Is the Apple News redirecting you to what? Not a browser version of the story, but it's in Apple News is sort of domain.
It stays within their platform, if you like.
Yeah.
And in some cases, you can read the entire article on Apple News. In other cases, they will then redirect you. But it's still obviously all being housed within Apple News. Apple News has started to help out and they're actually starting to help publishers that work with them get subscriptions. Mm. But Apple, a bit like what you do with the App Store, Apple are taking a 30% cut of that. So it's tough to work with them, and it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. So is this kind of, you know, is Adam Singolda and kind of what he's doing here, do we think that's the right approach in helping publishers actually be able to, you know, there are aggregation sites out there that can help you but still deliver you the yield that you need to be able to survive as a publisher? Thoughts, please, gentlemen.
Well, I think it's a great illustration of the position that the GAFAs have taken and how everyone else is so dependent on them now. Than, you know, I mean, taking 30%, 50%, more even than that when you talk about AdX and Google, that's not a sustainable business model for any content provider, right? Any content creator cannot survive on a, you know, 20, 50% margin on what they're supposed to get. And I think that's another illustration of that. And yes, any initiative like Taboola News or others that are enabling publishers or content owners to better monetize their assets and not be too dependent on Google, Facebook, Apple, you know, Amazon, if you do the analogy with retail, is a great initiative as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. It depends what the model is. I think it's really smart because, Apple users are just dumb. Let's put that out there. Apple phone users are dumb. They're small children in many ways.
I am an Apple phone user. Yeah. So I am a dumb small child. Thank you, Kieran. Yeah.
So are you, from what I can see on the desk, are you, Kieran?
He certainly is not.
I'm a Samsung user and I use Google's Android platform because it's open and I can do whatever I want with it. I'm not a Fisher-Price toy fan. But that's no disrespect.
Insults just keep on coming.
Yeah, but if you think about the Android ecosystem, which represents 75% of the European user base and much more globally outside the US, it's 50-50, isn't it? There isn't really a news app of worth. There's no, I'm using Feedly, right? Which is more or less an RSS aggregator. It's really good, but not very mobile friendly. They've built it with, it's a web-based product as opposed to like an app-based product. So there's definitely an opening for a news app in the market. Like I was just chatting this before the podcast started, and there's a company I remembered in China that just basically has built a news app aggregator which sits on the various platforms in China, and it's Tatui, I think it's called, and it's got 120 million users globally, and it's worth about $20 billion in valuation. So it makes all its money off advertising, but it spreads traffic to the publishers, which the, obviously I haven't used the Apple News app because I don't have it, but obviously I the fact that they keep you in their ecosystem mean they can control it. Now, if Taboola can figure out a way to redirect traffic back to the publishers, I think that's a winner, like, you know. And particularly on the Google handset. Remember, Google could launch their own product and kill it, but, you know, they've got other things to worry about at the minute.
Yeah, until they decide to do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's
the thing. I think that it really illustrates the level of dependence that we are all on when it comes to access to content, access to service, access to product, access to intelligence. Access to, you know, it all goes through a couple of platforms, right?
If Taboola can get, you know, their biggest problem is going to be getting people to use it, right? They're going to have to spend money. I feel this is
the problem of scale, and also the reason Apple News and Google News are so popular with your average consumer is because. It feels like Apple. It feels like Google. It's that native environment where you're not going from site to site, which is where them versus things like Feedly, where you are being directed back to the original source, where it might not be mobile friendly, it might not be web friendly, it might not load very well, all these different issues, which is why the Apple News example does work really well. And Taboola News have tried to emulate that in what ways they can, but it also obviously, but trying to remember from our perspective that it is still all about the publisher.
I think that, just speaking from a purely Taboola point of view, right, I really like what they're doing here. I think it's interesting. I just feel it's a different company. I feel like if I was going to do this, your biggest cost now is customer acquisition. This goes back to, it's almost like you're a totally different company, right? Taboola is a very good ad tech company, makes money for publishers, makes money for itself. It's good in the native space, right? And this is no disrespect to Taboola, but this feels to me like almost like a direct-to-consumer player, right? You have to spend money on acquiring users, right? So if I was Taboola, I would probably incubate this, and this is probably what they're going to do, and then spin it out as a separate company and get big funding for it, because they're going to have to spend a lot of money to get users, right? And then the next thing they got to do is go to the manufacturers, right? I would be talking to Samsung right now and say, Samsung, I'm doing this. This is going to stick Google in the eye, right? All the handset manufacturers, get it pre-installed on the phone and then do a rev share. So what they could do is, you know, obviously it could bolt on the ad tech business, send the traffic to the publishers, and then basically got like a guarantee that we'll be able to serve your recommendation ads on that article at a higher cut for us, but at the same time you can run ads on the right, so you're making more money. It's traffic for free, so I could see that as a real model. I actually think that they're thinking about this really cleverly. I have to say that they're looking at this going, we can make a lot of money, because as you said, Matthew, it's like nothing's for free anymore, right? Apple News is a pile of shit, right? It's like for Apple only, right? Why can't they give that traffic back to the users? Like, there should be a snippet, and it should be just redirecting people back to the homepage where publishers can make money, right? Yeah,
but they're at an unfair at a disadvantage competing against Google News, against Apple News, Google News, and all the pre-installed all the manufacturers.
So.
Of course they are. Apple News is on your locked screen, right?
I don't think
they'll never get there.
Forget about
right?
Apple, right?
Why is it different for Google?
Because
they could kill it tomorrow if they wanted. Right? Maybe they don't want because it's too visible.
Google can't
because whatever.
Kill it. How can Google kill an app? They can't.
They can delist it from Google Play.
They can
delist it from the search engine. I mean, we've seen those cases over and over again.
No,
right?
I disagree
with
this.
Google has basically killed shopping engines. They've killed flight comparison engines. Why? Because they've just put their own product first.
Yeah, but Google won't do that unless Google build. This is all speculation because we haven't even seen the Taboola app yet, right? But if Taboola build a really good app, right, and get it into the handsets and get it pre-installed, then they're in a good position to make it work. Google could come out with their own, but then they're going to have to play with Taboola's rules. We're going to have to redirect traffic to the publishers, right? Will they do that? I don't know.
Yeah, and I agree. I think competition is good because it will force them to open up. It will force them to review their rev share deals. It will force them to be better. But in the end, it is unfair competition because you're playing on their turf. You're playing on their rules.
I think that Google
because they
in,
own it. They own the relationship with the consumers. And not because consumers are lazy, because they just make it
easier for everyone else.
Yeah.
But I think that's why that Taboola have been very smart, as you say, Kieran, and gone down the, we're not just going to launch an app on Android on the Google Play Store. We're
going to
go straight to manufacturers.
Absolutely,
than Kieran on your Samsung phone, you're using the full Android.
Oh, they're
full
actually
Android.
Doing this.
No, but that's what they've obviously done with ZTE and with the everybody else, is that if they go to them and they have them pre-install, it's not working as just having an app in the Android store.
Yeah.
It's actually having, you know, an app in the kind of watered down version of Android that are on these handsets.
Yeah.
And that way the manufacturer can retain the control and they can say, no, we want to work with Taboola. Google, you can bugger off, basically.
RevShare, Taboola, if you're listening, RevShare with the manufacturers, right? Make incentivize it, right? Anything but Google will make you a star of those particular handsets. They want more revenue. So if you can do that, great. And obviously try and give the publishers as much free traffic to make money, because that's what publishers need. They need free traffic. So I like this. And this is a good example of an independent ad tech company going all in. I like it.
And do we think, obviously, the news about the app you mentioned in China obviously proves that there could be scale to it. Do we think that this could be actually scalable?
Yes. I think it's huge. I think it's a huge opportunity, because there is a lot of people who would use that app. And if you make it, like, they're going to have to focus a lot on user experience, on the UI, on how it interacts with how they aggregate the news themselves, to build the algorithms to do that, because Google News obviously does a good job of that. And as Matthew said, they could introduce their own free app. Maybe they'll do it, maybe they won't. But could they block Taboola? Maybe, but Google's under such scrutiny right now that any kind of move... I mean, this wouldn't even be, like, what the builders are trying to do, wouldn't even be a dent on Google's revenue. But these guys, Tattoo, come out of nowhere, right? They come out of nowhere and now have a massive, massive base and are making so much money. And obviously Google will be looking at this going, uh-oh, can't have this anymore. But the builders out of the blocks, they know what the plan is, and hopefully they'll make it work.
Yeah, hopefully. Right, on that note, story two. So Luma Partners have released their Q4 2018 market report. It's been very active in the ad tech and martech space. And some key things that Terry Kawaja has kind of brought out of it are that ad spend is growing, but all of that growth is being sucked up by the duopoly. That's probably not surprising. It's something we've spoken about many a time. Investment in mad tech is still strong, but apart from the trade desk, it doesn't necessarily pay to go public. And there is the opportunity for scaled exits is shrinking. So, I mean, you guys, you've seen the report. Kind of, what are your thoughts on those sort of key takeouts? And do you think that it's an accurate portrayal of the opportunity of M&A and the opportunity of growth within ad tech and martech?
Well, I think the fundamentals are still there. I mean, advertising, marketing is becoming digital across the board, right? Every medium, every channel to engage with consumers is becoming digital. And we need technology to manage those relationships, right? So whether you call it ad tech, martech, or whatever, whether you call it DMP, CDP, I mean, all of those acronyms that we've created, they're just a way to segment a universe that is growing and is becoming more and more important for brands and for content owners, right? And connecting them automatically through technology is the way forward. There's no discussion around it. What I think is interesting is the fact that, you know, one of the difference we could make between ad tech and martech is that ad tech, you take a cut of media revenue or media spend. Martech, you charge on a flat fee, like license basis, right? If you look at this, yes, the money's moving to license because the market's maturing, right? There's no room anymore for people who are taking 50% margin in the middle. Unless they are Apple and Facebook, Google and Facebook, right? Everyone else, and 50% is a conservative figure. Everyone else is being squeezed, as they should be, just because the market's maturing and brands and content owners are demanding efficiencies. They're demanding to streamline all those things, and there's just more money. So it's normal that, you know, if you take 50% of a 10K deal, you're not going to take 50% of a 1 million deal, right? That there should be economies of scale. So if we say the market is moving away from a percentage of media spend type of business model to a licensed business model, yes, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I read in the report that says it's all about martech now, and ad tech as a business model is not sustainable anymore and shouldn't attract so much VC money. I mean, there's been way too much VC money thrown out at shitty companies who are just, you know, arbitraging and making deals based on relationships. And that money actually encouraged them to make more deals and to have more relationship with planners and buyers and take them to Thailand and whatever just to get the money without the technological value in the middle. So getting rid of that, I'm not going to cry on their grave.
Yeah, I mean, so in the kind of the ad tech world of old, shady practices breed shady practices, and actually, the we're not saying that kind of the ad tech
shady
market
shady or
is
at least undifferentiated, like yeah. relationships based. You know, just throw money at relationships and hope they'll pay off. That's not sustainable. That's not what a mature market. That's not how a mature market operates. Mm. Right? It has to be efficiency. It has to be added value based. Yes, there are still areas where you should throw VC money because you have investments to make and you need to build something. But it's not just shady. It's also like undifferentiated.
Yeah. And you raise a very interesting point, actually, because it's not talking around the fact that, you know, ad tech is dead. And there's lots of talk around, you know, ad tech is dead, digital advertising. We're all going to lose out to Google and Facebook. What's the point in even trying? Actually, it's not saying that at all. We are. There's a lot of evidence that our industry is maturing and is going in the right direction. And it makes sense given its age and given kind of everything it's gone through over the past decade or so. And actually, your talk about kind of moving to a license-based model and actually ad tech maturing to a world where ad tech and martech are converging. And it's not necessarily that ad tech itself is a pointless thing that exists. It's that the way that it is operating with suppliers, with demand partners is moving into that martech area.
It's going to be less about execution, you know, undifferentiated, like ability to do things, and more about the intelligence, more about the insights, more about the analytics, more about the infrastructure that we need to operate at scale efficiently. That's where the investment will be, and that's where the investment should be, because that's where you create value and you create uplift.
Mm. Absolutely. Kieran, you've been quiet for about 2 minutes.
That's unusual.
What are your thoughts? I know.
I agree with everything Matthew said. I agree that a lot of money went to undifferentiated companies. I'm just writing down a company that's indicative of that, with Market Mule. You're probably aware of that company. Rhymes with Market Mule. Actually, Rock, if you don't really care, I'll tell you what else. But we always challenged their model here at Exchange War for years and years and years. I said, you're just an ad network. And no, we've got AI, we've got this, we've got that other. And then it transpired that they were basically mixing and matching customer data. And they spent a lot of money, as Matthew said, entertaining the planner buyers. And that has no... That's probably sustained quite... To sustain the IO model for many years. I believe that Terry Quadgett just released it, but we're basing our conversation around that. It was $15.3 billion invested across 1,200 companies. And there were 73 exits over $100 million. So 72 exits at 1,200 companies. What were the rest of those 1,200 companies doing? I know there's always burn in startups, but a lot of those companies are based on IOs. You know, relationships with agencies. I mean, we know ourselves about the typical model, right? You have some friends at an agency, they give you some money, and then it's kicked back to the agency themselves. That behavior is rife. It still is rife to this day. But the fact that this money's kind of been sucked out means that value companies will appear, like fixing real problems in our ecosystem, right? Identity, you know, attribution, mobile targeting, GDPR compliant targeting. These are real problems that we need to fix. And these are real problems that will be addressed by good companies. So I don't see this as doom and gloom. I mean, there's a lot of negativity around ad tech, but there are people who probably should have left years ago anyway, like, you know. It's just natural churn, like, you know. We have to get away from the IO-based business, right? The way that things have been done, the trading deals. Like, why should trading directors at agencies have the power they have? It's nonsensical. It should be based on...
Especially when they use it to put all the money on Google and Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. And it should be based on value, performance, context, premium, all those things, and analytics. But it hasn't for years. Like, we know we could name companies in this podcast that got money, and we know that they don't have it's all a fancy UI or just a nice bit of marketing. There's just nothing behind it. Like,
but does this then spell a shake up in the broader kind of operational sense? Talking about, you know, moving from, you know, the IO of old needs to evolve and move on, and we're moving from a kind of a percentage of sales to license model. that then begs the question, it makes it much harder for your average ad tech startup to then be able to go into an agency, for example, and say, I want to run a test with you, because that test based on X percentage commission is easy, it's quick to turn around, can be done in a couple of weeks. If it then moves into the sort of license model, the testing bed of that is more complicated and the kind of contractual element of that is more complicated. But so it makes everything more long-winded. Does that then mean that it's more difficult to get into these companies in the first place? If you are an ad tech startup now, yes. Would that mean you are going to struggle?
Yes. Definitely. So the sales cycle for software is much longer than sales cycle of campaign.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. But it doesn't mean that the good ones are not going to emerge.
Right. It doesn't mean that spell a shake up in general into how those contracts and those agreements come into play in the first place.
The barrier to entry is higher now.
Absolutely.
And that's a good thing, because we, like the three of us could easily, 2 or 3 years ago, could have started a company with nothing and gone to our favourite agency, got some spend, and we would be way to the races. And there's plenty of companies who've exited off the back of that. And we know a few of them, and good luck to them. But, there's nothing there, really. They actually probably...
There are skills. Skills, people skills. Yeah. Yes, but it's not hard assets.
No. It's not tech. And the 72 exits probably are companies that had proper technology, like actually a bunch of developers solving issues.
Well, you don't need VC money if you're not tech, right? Why do you want to invest?
No, if you're a service business, you don't need you just kind of raise your own money. Like, I mean, an angel fund will get you a nice bit of money to start a consultancy, but to actually do a proper tech, I mean, there's lots of problems in this space that need to be fixed. And I think that we've spent so much time on, dancing to the agency's tune, particularly around the IO business, that all these problems be swept away. And the good thing is, I mean, the in-housing thing is quite interesting, because now the marketers are in control, particularly of the tech contracts. They are looking for more. They want proper solutions. Their CFO is going to start asking questions. What value do they bring to us? And where are we spending the money, Procurement is going to ask that same question as well. Are we getting a proper value? So I've seen a ton of companies that are really interesting and doing some interesting stuff. Boring companies fixing boring problems. It's not the sexy ski trips to Barcelona and the Real Madrid games.
Yeah. And skiing in Barcelona is getting increasingly difficult with global warming.
It is a challenge.
I think it's a clear sign of maturing, right? When you're a retailer, you're a product manufacturer, you want to distribute in a new country. You're not going to build a distribution network and stores in that country. You're going to have a reseller, right? And you're going to get that reseller is going to make 50% margin, but it's you're starting a business. It's little money, and you're happy to give away that 50%. Once that market becomes big enough and important enough for you as a product manufacturer, you're going to set your own distribution channels and you're going to have your own infrastructure to distribute. That's maturity, right? It's exactly where we are. A lot of brands, a lot of publishers have outsourced programmatic execution to third parties who are making a shitload of money because they were in the middle and controlling it for them. Now that it's becoming the default mechanism to monetize and engage with audiences and all those things, it's becoming core for brands and for publishers to control this. So it's not about servicing them anymore. It's about providing with the tools so that they can do it themselves. And that's traditional maturation of the market. The market's becoming more mature. And so as a result, providers of that market can't be service companies anymore. They have to be infrastructure and product companies.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good thing.
And that brings us very nicely into our third story of the week, which is the news that RTL Group, who obviously own SpotX, have acquired a company called YoSpace. YoSpace are a UK-based server-side dynamic ad insertion company. They're based in Glamorous Staines. And they were bought for €29 million. And it's obviously kind of helps reinforce RTL Group's and SpotX's kind of shift into looking at digitalization of TV and kind of the whole TV and video streaming space. Is actually a very interesting and great acquisition. And it kind of ties into what we were saying earlier about the fact that, maybe boring is the future. Maybe if you are a company, or a tech company that can focus on one thing, find a solution and try and solve it, that is what will get you a decent exit rather than trying to be jack of all trades, master of none. I mean, what are your thoughts on the YoSpace acquisition and how does that feed into what we were talking about?
100% agree with what you're saying. Jack of all trade doesn't work. We're in a super competitive market, which is, floated by VC money. If you're going to emerge, you're going to emerge on one thing and one thing only, right? And so I think that's a great example. And they've been around for a long time, Yospace,
10
right?
Years.
They've been along. Yeah, exactly. And they've kept at it, and they're really focused on this like dynamic ad insertion in video feeds, and they've become really, really good at it. And as a result, you can see them you know, going out to like a brighter future within RTL Group and Bertelsmann, which is in itself a very interesting example as well. I'm sure we're going to talk about that, but very interesting example of a publisher of a media group who's really putting its money where its mouth is and understanding that this is the future of monetization of the content that I'm creating. I need to own this. And they did Spotfix, they did SmartClip, they did there's another company in the US doing buying ClipD, I think it's called. So they're really building up their own internal ability to monetize and to control their business model. And that ties into what I was saying earlier. You cannot outsource that to a third party anymore.
No. It's interesting.
So a couple of things to say. Congratulations to Yo Media. That was great exit. They only raised about 600K from my... I'm actually bootstrapped most of the business.
Nice return.
So, and as you said, Lindsay, they've solved a really... in many ways, kind of a boring problem. It's not very sexy reading about, you know, stitching, you know. They have focused on that one thing and done it very well. And obviously now it's a key part of the programmatization of TV and video, right? So this is the way I see things going in the ad tech space. I think that, as Matthew alluded to, that middle layer that does execution is going to start to consolidate quite aggressively this year. And this will be the year. Maybe they've kind of staved that off because we've gone into video. We went to display and went to video and we're going to other channels. Maybe there's another year to go of churn. But the companies that are really going to be of interest this year are the ones solving real problems, right? Like the like of ID5 doing... you know, you're solving a real problem around cookie matching and identity. The companies like Percept, who are UK based, they're actually trying to automate the auditing process. It's a really interesting company. InfoSum, another company, they're trying to figure out the identity problem, but a cookie-less solution. Illuma, who are just around the corner, are doing a contextual based stuff. So there's loads of companies, particularly in Europe, who are not raising tons of money and actually trying to fixate on real problems. And I think that's the way to do it. Bootstrap the business. And maybe it's not sexy for M&A and the likes of Terry Quadger for this space. If you read his report, it's quite negative about ad tech and he kind of like dumps all over it. But I actually think it's quite exciting because there's a huge opportunity for ad tech to solve, particularly around TV and video. I mean, the RTL example is amazing. The acquisition spree they've gone, because these people do not want the same to happen then that happened to publishers, online display.
Yep.
Facebook, Google just ate their lunch. So they need to protect themselves, build a moat. You know,
but at the same time, they're building an infrastructure that will enable them to do programmatic delivery of ads on TV, which is also an interesting signal that all media are becoming data-driven, you know, one-to-one,
waking up
addressable. That's what we're talking about, right?
It's good for ad tech. All these problems cannot be solved by publishers building themselves. So there's going to be third parties building technology and they'll be acquired, like solving problems. It is interesting to see all these broadcasters going after this. I mean, like AT&T buying AppNexus, right? And I'm sure there will be more acquisitions this year. Like there will be more acquisitions as broadcasters, audio. I mean, we've seen the... Capital Radio bought Exterion, the same
Global. Yeah,
bought Exterion. You've seen aggregation or consolidation, not just because they need to protect themselves against digital barbarians, if you will, like Google, Facebook, Amazon. They're coming for them, like, you know, and they need to protect themselves. And ad tech is actually independent ad tech is a good way to do that. Like it's an interesting
best barrier. It's own your distribution.
Yeah,
right. And it's for me, it's akin to the you know, the pub tech movement where you see publishers kind of building their own tech or acquiring tech to be able to own their, you know, what the UK publishers are doing with Ozone.
Yeah, I like Ozone.
Built on Prebid and kind of owning this instead of having like outsourcing.
It's open source. It's
all that same movement of kind of people understanding that actually they need to own their distribution channel, and distribution channel is technology.
Yeah.
That's how we distribute content and audiences to brands today. Right, so you need to own the technology that enables you to do that if you want to be competitive, if you want to survive, right? Or else you outsource that to Google and Facebook, and we all know what that looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that there will be some interesting spaces that ad tech will address. This year, audio is one. I think the TV radio space or TV video space is really interesting. OTT is kind of nascent at the minute. It's not really got going yet in terms of, like, you look at the content that's on Roku, it's your typical Netflix and Bloomberg, and there's nothing new coming up there. But I expect that to change. So ad tech will be there to help those guys make money. So I think it's like, it's, if you were to look at it, it looks like it's a disaster or it's a crater, but the dumb money's leaving the industry and good companies will start to rise, and we see it every day. Like, people come to us and we say, I really like that. That's actually solving a real life problem in our industry. It's not an ad network. Ad networks can do ad week. Just let them do ad week. We do quality. Anyway, for ad week.
That's a great way to move on to the next section of our podcast, which is learning all about ID5 and Matthew. So first of all, I want you to explain why the company is called ID5.
Okay. Well, because the name sounds good, don't you think?
It's a great name.
Sounds amazing.
Sounds better
right.
In French.
And well, how does it sound in French?
In French,
he's about to explain.
Five is sync.
Yeah, sync.
And so synchronize
ID.
Come on, it's an accent question.
Right?
In Irish, it's sync.
Okay, it is sync.
Yeah, so it started as a play on word, and
it's Cooig.
Cooig.
Five is Cooig in French in Irish.
Yeah. ID Cooig wouldn't work as well as ID5. I'm sorry, mate.
No.
So that's the original. It started as a code name and became the name of the company.
Excellent. And how long have you been going?
About 18 months now. Yeah. About 18 months. Started just in the summer of 2017. I've been building up bootstrapped the business to start with, then raised some early stage VC money last spring. And I've been building the team and the product and the service and the customer base ever since. There's 9 of us now, based in London. We have over 35 platforms that we work with. We have 2 billion users that we identify every month globally, 1 billion of them in Europe.
Yeah, that news was released back end of last year, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, just before Christmas.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it's great. I think for us, 18 months ago, the discussion on identity was very different. I think it was very difficult to get meetings and talk about that. It was not something that was high on the radar of people. But I think the market at large has understood that this is what makes the GAFAs so good. It's their efficiency, their ability to identify users at scale, over time, across devices. It's their unique differentiator. Mm. That's the space where they are much better than anyone else. They don't have better data. They don't know more about you than Auto Trader knows about, what car you like, or Zoopla knows about what, type of house you're looking to buy. They don't have better formats or ad placements. God knows ads suck on Facebook and Google, but their ability to identify user and to execute, to deliver audiences to brands, is unrivaled. Right?
Yeah.
If we want to become competitive, we as an industry, publishers, premium publishers, ad tech, technology providers operating in that space, if we want to become competitive against them, we need to have a better way to identify users and to be more efficient at executing campaign for brands.
And so I would love to dig into kind of the core problem that ID5 is looking to solve and how you are doing that. Because obviously we talked about it earlier, kind of the identity and how the conversation around identity is certainly shifting in 2019. Like, we're already seeing it and we're only a few days in, kind of based off a few things happening at the back end of last year. And there are things like the Ozone project launching and that kind of thing. How's ID5? What's ID5's play within that?
So the long-term goal, again, is to build an infrastructure that brands and publishers can leverage to execute, to address audiences in digitally, right? That's the long-term view, and we're not the only one looking at this, but this is something that as an industry we need to solve if we want to survive, right? To do that, we looked at what we are as an industry we are doing today to bypass the issues around identity, and right now we do something called cookie matching. Right, which is everyone has a different name for a user, a different ID on a user, and we need to match those IDs to be able to share information. It's very inefficient, very cumbersome. It pisses off everyone. No one's really investing on it. So that's the low-hanging fruits that we're addressing. We're focusing on improving the cookie matching process just to make existing relationship between SSPs, DSPs, DMPs work better, be more efficient, have better match rates, make sure that a PMP will deliver, because the audience that the brand is looking for will be available. It's not going to be lost in translation because of the inefficiencies of the matching process, right? So first is solving this. By solving this, we're creating a unique identifier. We're creating a common language for the market to work with. And that's a base that we can build on to go to a better identification framework in the future.
Mm. Interesting. And before we go into the next question, I just want to kind of say, you keep saying GAFA. It's a very French term. So for those that don't know what GAFA is, it's Google, Amazon, Facebook and Apple. It's not really talked about in other is markets outside France. Okay. No.
GAFA in the UK is boss.
Yeah, we call it, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be like
boss.
A...
boss.
Yeah, he'd be like a soccer botch boss. Like, he'd be manager of a team. The GAFA.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So just people that didn't know what GAFA was.
Okay, so no GAFA. Okay.
No, keep saying it. It's absolutely fine. Absolutely fine. And so what has your growth been over the past 18 months, and kind of what's your growth strategy for the next few years?
So we've really focused on proving the concept. It's a... We're really coming at it with a new way of looking at the problem. Evangelizing the market, educating the market about what the problem is and how we are. Everybody's taking for granted that match rates are shit, right? They're like, yeah, sorry, that's the way it is, right? Like 50%, 75%, it's best. You know, it's like, yeah, the others are worse than us, so we're not that bad. It means that you leave, you know, between a quarter and a half of the data that you want to use on the table, right? As a publisher, you leave a quarter or half of the money that you could make by selling your ads on the table. It is a huge area of inefficiency, but no one's really looking into it because, that's the way it is, right? We have a solution for that. So the focus for us over the past 18 months has been to go educate publishers, educate tech vendors, and kind of work with them to understand how can we best solve that problem for them as a way to build this kind of unified way to identify user that everybody can leverage to trade with. Neutrality is key for that. You cannot be, you cannot provide this and at the same time be a buyer or a seller or a data provider. So we've set up as a separate entity. We've taken VC money, no strategic money. We've kind of make sure there was no ties to any of the players in the market so that we are not seen as being potentially conflicted with any of our clients. So we're building a completely neutral platform that everybody can leverage to improve the way they communicate with each other. That's really been the focus of the past 18 months. I think we'll get to a point now where we have proven the concept. We've proven that it works. We've proven that we can create uplift. We can enable brands to better engage with audiences, publishers to better monetize their audiences, data providers to better monetize their data. So now it's scaling. Mm-hmm. It's going from 35 or 40 platforms that are working with us right now to 200. It's going from mostly a European focus to a global platform. And it's execution. It's, get your head down and get it work.
Have you scaled in Europe, Denny? Are you with enough platforms to make it work here?
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, we're the way we're looking at this, right? Instead of saying, hey, let's all use the ID5 ID, right, before it exists, which is a super difficult pitch to have.
Mm.
We're saying, well, let us improve the relationship between platform A and platform B.
Mm.
Right? You have a use case there. You're selling data. You're selling inventory. There's money going through. You're leaving money on the table. Let us improve that flow. So it only takes two platforms to make it work.
Mm.
Right now we've got 35. So we've got a number of integrations that we can improve. And that's enabled us to scale across Europe. Again, we see over 1 billion users every month in Europe. So we're at scale in the UK, in France, in Germany, in the Benelux, in Spain, in Italy, in the Nordics, in Poland, right? All of those markets, we have a massive reach, which enabled us to provide identification capabilities to platforms that they can be efficient in delivering campaigns.
So who are you the client of? The publisher or the platform?
It's mostly right now it's mostly an ad tech a platform, right, problem, right?
Right.
It's a platform ID that has to be matched to another platform ID. So we're dealing with platforms. Publishers are a very interested party to that discussion because it's their money that's at stake, right? To give you some numbers, if you have an 80% match rate, if your SSP has an 80% match rate with a DSP, it means that 20% of those impressions will not be monetized. Plain and simple. Or they'll be monetized for a fraction of their value. It's between 3 and 4x, right? The impact on CPM. Unmatched impression to unmatched impression, 4x difference, right? You're selling a £1 CPM while you could have sold a £4 CPM. And that impacts 20 to 30% of your inventory. Do the math. Massive, massive impact on publisher revenue. So publishers have a role to play in helping us convince their platforms because that's in their best interest.
Yeah, so they're a stakeholder of yours.
They're very much a stakeholder, and we're engaging with a lot of publishers in the UK, in Germany, in France, in Holland to get them to help us convince the platform that they should look into this. And it's working. And it's working. And that's how we get traction. But it's the platform.
But surely the platforms do well as well. If they... more money spent.
Of course.
Platforms make money as well.
If you can increase your match rate.
No one benefits from a low match rate.
Yeah.
No. Everybody will make more money if we're more efficient. Everybody apart from, not the GAFAs, but Google and Facebook, because it means that we can redirect some of the spend that goes there for efficiency reasons to the rest of the market if we become more efficient, right? Mm. So it's in everybody's best interest to make this happen. But best interest is not enough of motivation. Right. Yeah. So that's why we're focusing on proving the value. We're focusing on testing. We're focusing on educating the market and just having like hard numbers. In the end, it's making more money is the best way to sign a client off, right? That's if we help them make, if we create more value in the market, we'll be better off. And that's why we're focusing on proving right now.
And so you're educating a market that often talks about this quest for a single ID.
Yeah.
Do you think this single ID, or kind of what that means to them as an industry, is the right answer to solving the identity challenge?
I think we need to have common IDs. We need to have common ways to identify users, right?
So unifying it.
Shared IDs is the term that we use, right? I don't think there should be only one. I think it would actually probably be dangerous to have only one. But having a handful of ways to identify your user and making sure that those ways are compatible with each other, I think is the best way forward for the industry. Right now, we have hundreds of proprietary IDs, right? Each platform has its own identifier on each user, on each device of each user. It's a mess, right? Mm. It's like everybody's speaking a different language, right? And you need to have so many translation dictionary that it's not manageable. It doesn't scale. So reducing this to a handful of shared IDs or shared languages would bring that level of efficiency forward. So you talk about unified ID, you talk about single IDs, shared IDs, whatever the name is, we need to have a common language. If we want to share information, if we want to talk to each other, if we want to be able to communicate, we need to have a common language. And that's the common language that we're focusing on.
Interesting. And obviously, Kieran talked earlier about for ad tech to win, it needs to have a focus. We brought your name up in that.
Yeah.
He referred to it as kind of boring. Would you say that ID5 is solving a boring problem?
Boring.
I jest, of course.
Boring is beautiful in many ways.
Boring
some
is
of the best
future.
Companies in the world are solving.
Absolutely.
I could have called the company the boring company, but the name was taken already. So there you go. No, actually, it's a very good point. Yes, it is plumbing.
Yeah,
we are dealing with plumbing, right? When I interview people, the first talk that we have is, are you ready to come work for plumbing? Are you ready to work for a boring company? This is not going to be fun. It's not going to be fancy. We're not going to take clients skiing in Barcelona or whatever. It's plumbing, right? It's infrastructure.
But I saw on your LinkedIn, they do get a nice mouse mat and a branded water bottle.
Absolutely.
I did see that picture on LinkedIn.
We're going to make it for it.
Absolutely.
I have to disagree with it, though. I mean, like, this idea, the industry you work in is great, right? These people can still come to ATS and have beers and, you know, enjoy high quality content. But you're actually doing something interesting. I think it's quite fascinating to knit all those different platforms together and figuring out how, you know, a European ecosystem works and what publishers talk to. I think that'd be really interesting.
Would you rather be selling feckin' to some
dollar account manager at an agency looking for IOs and having to go out and get drunk and pretend you like them? I mean,
well,
come on.
Exactly. It is. And it is, particularly when you, Matthew, have worked in the industry for a long time and you've obviously been working on the other side of it and looked at it and gone, what the hell is going on? This needs to be sorted. I think I want to have a go at sorting it.
Yeah.
When I say it's boring, I believe me, I'm not bored. But it is pipes. It is. And that's what we have to fix if we want to work to, if we want the industry to work well, we have to fix the pipes. We have to fix the infrastructure on which we're running. And that's what we're trying to do. It is a fascinating adventure. I like the fact that we have values, that we're doing this to benefit publishers, mm-hmm. to help them regain control over the ad market. I mean, their distribution channel right now is broken, right? Mm-hmm. You cannot sell only half of what you have and expect to be okay with it, right? We need to do better at this. I don't want my daughters to get their news from Google and Facebook in 15 years because all the publishers will have died because, you know, they were not able to monetize their content. So it is boring in a way, but it is I think it's a good goal. It's an ambitious goal, but it's a good goal. And we're trying to make the industry work better because we believe that, you know, premium content should have a chance to reach its audiences. We believe that innovation will not come from Google and Facebook. It will come from companies like us, like YoSpace, like Infosum, who are doing this outside of the walled garden. And if there's only the walled garden, then there won't be innovation anymore. So
I agree. I mean, if you keep, why would Google have to innovate? All they have to do is protect their own lot. Remember, like, and this
protect
is not me
buy.
Being hard on Google, because people have accused me of doing that. They have amazing engineers and they've built probably the most incredible utility product of all time, which is search, the best search engine of all time. But for an air industry, they've bought their way in here, like, you know, they bought DoubleClick, they bought AdMelt, they bought YouTube. They bought Invite Media. You know, that should tell you all you need to know, right? DFP has not innovated at all in nearly 25 years. When did Google buy? I can't remember when Google bought DoubleClick.
10 years.
But
12 years.
You look at the header bidding evolution, right? That was basically built on the back of Google's inability to build a universal auction within the ad server. So I agree with you. I mean, there's still despite the doom and gloom, there's still a ton of innovation in our space, and long may it continue. Because, as Matthew said, these publishers need help, and it shouldn't be the responsibility of Google and Facebook to give money to publishers. It's not their business, right? I think ad tech's business should be to serve the marketer and the middleman, agency, whoever, and the publisher. That's their role. And if ad tech can do that, it will have a bright future because, you know, The Guardian, The Telegraph, you know, newspaper publishers, The Figaro, all over Europe, they need to have a layer for themselves around data activation, execution, all the rest of it. So this is really important, and I'm, that's why I'm.
And we're trying to standardize the way that infrastructure operates.
Yeah.
Just so that it's a platform for innovation, it's a platform for engagement that is working well, that is efficient.
Cool.
And on that note, let's leave it on a very nice positive note.
Yes.
I'm going to say thank you. That's the end of this week's Mantech podcast. We will see you again next week. I want to say thank you very much to my guests, Matthew Roche and Kieran O'Kane.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Matthew. Bye.